attendants for the women, prison guards essentially, as well as a robust security team, and he invited his close friends and business associates to use the facility and the products stored there as they wished. Hollywood moguls, investment bankers, shipping magnates, the CEO of an airline. The ranch became their own personal Disneyland of debauchery. Over the previous winter, Cage had traveled to Vilnius, Lithuania, spending time with his entourage in nightclubs. Jaco Verduren and his men ran his personal security detail. Cage and his associates chose 6 women over their week there, then returned home. Recruiters took the women and placed them into the northern pipeline, and in a matter of weeks, the girls were in California, standing before Cage. But as was always the case, after a few months, he grew tired of the new lot and wanted some fresh supply. So 6 weeks earlier, he'd gone to Bucharest, a return trip because his last time there had been fruitful. On his visit, he picked out 3 women, including a stunning young brunette who chatted with him at length in a nightclub. The young brunette was half a head taller than him, and she possessed the highest cheekbones, the softest lips, and the most piercing eyes he'd ever seen. He'd grow tired of her once she was his, but for now, the anticipation of having her subjected to all manner of humiliation for his pleasure in his nest filled his brain with an impossibly rich mixture of feel-good chemicals. Cage lived for this shit. He'd left Bucharest with instructions for his local recruiters to get that girl in the pipeline and over to him as soon as possible by any means necessary. And then he'd returned home to the world of a multimillionaire father, to baseball practice and dinners with friends in outdoor cafes on Rodeo Drive, and evenings in the hot tub, talking over family matters with his wife. Ken Cage pocketed his phone, then started back towards the door to the studio, but he stopped himself. Turning to his bodyguard, he said, "Fuck it, Sean. Juliet's done her bit. Heather's already pissed at me for leaving. Might as well call it a day. Back to the house, sir?" Cage shook his head and began walking towards the Mercedes. Hall stayed with him. "Where Heather can yell at me? Hell no. We're going to the ranch." "Right, sir." 15. Maya stared out at the ocean and the late afternoon sun hanging over it, and she wondered where the hell she was. Her view was partially obstructed by the ruined wall of the large, old, bombed-out warehouse, but enough of the coast was visible that she could tell she was somewhere beautiful. But it did not make her happy. Her predicament had not changed, only her view. The last 2 days and all of this morning, she and the others from Mostar had sat in the blacked-out bus, parked in an underground garage. They'd been fed fast food, and a pair of buckets had been placed in the back for the women to use as a toilet. But no one was allowed to leave or to make a sound. It was a miserable 2 days, and Maya's back ached and her bleary eyes burned from crying and lack of sleep. Then the girls from Mostar had been brought inside the ruined building during the daylight this afternoon, which surprised her because this was the only time she'd seen the sun since the night she was taken. Now she and the others, minus Diana, the poor girl who had been shot while trying to flee through the woods, were kept in a large open room with blown-out windows and trash all around. There was a view of a large body of water outside, but a 15-meter drop straight down onto broken masonry and concrete, sharp bent rebar and shattered glass, meant no one here was going to try to jump out the window, run to the beach, and swim away. Bombs or tanks had attacked this building, but long ago, as Maya could see full-sized trees growing through the rubble below. She hadn't paid attention in history class in school, but of course she knew about the war in Bosnia and Croatia and Kosovo and all those other places in the Balkans. This had to be Croatia, she felt almost certain, and the water in front of her, the Adriatic Sea. When they'd climbed off the bus, she'd been surprised to see that the Serbians were gone, and other men were watching over them now. Maya did not know what that meant. The one who ordered the women and girls about spoke English, and they were all darker-complected men. She couldn't tell if they were Turkish or Albanian or perhaps even Greek, but they seemed more organized and professional than the group of gangsters who held them before. She had no clue if this was good news or bad. There was no door to this room, and no furniture either, so the women and girls sat on the concrete floor. Any possible escape to the stairwell and then freedom was cut off by a group of five men who stood and sat near the open doorway. She had not been raped in the past 2 days, and she had not been raped in Bucharest or in Belgrade or in the cellar of the farmhouse. As far as she could tell, she was very much in the minority here in that regard. She didn't know what this meant, only thought it could be because she kept her head down and avoided any eye contact with anyone, even with the other hostages. Just as she thought this, the leader of the new set of guards stepped closer to the group, and he spoke in English with an accent Maya, not a native speaker of English, could not identify.
"We heard about the killing the other night. That wasn't us. That was the Serbs."
He said Serbs like it sickened him to do so.
"We wish you no harm, but if you try to leave our care, we will be forced to recover you and then to punish you and everyone else for your misbehavior. Do not try to leave, and you will be treated with respect."
Respect? Did he really say respect? Maya wanted to laugh at this, but she kept her eyes averted and her mouth closed. The man continued.
"I suspect you all have been wondering why you are here and where you are going. I can only tell you this. You arrived early due to the attack in Bosnia the other day. We were not ready to accept you, so we have put you here. Normally your quarters would be better, but we did the best with the time we had. Right now we are waiting on a boat, and it will arrive tomorrow night. And when it does arrive, you will all be taken to it and moved on to your next destination."
No one spoke still, but he answered the question everyone had.
"You want to know where you are going, yes?"
"I do not know."
"My men and I are here to keep you safe and to put each and every last one of you on the boat. That is all we know."
He paused, as if waiting for questions, but no one dared. Finally, he said,
"I've heard all about this American who tried to rescue you, and then committed another attack on the process in Bosnia."
Maya didn't know anything of another attack.
"Just be aware. My men are nothing like the Serbian hoodlums you've been surrounded by. My men are trained, skilled. We will remain vigilant, but we are unafraid of this masked men. Now," he continued, "we will be here for the rest of today and all day tomorrow. I suggest you rest, eat when the food arrives, and relax. I know the Serbians do not allow talking. That is not us. Talk to each other if you wish, but do so softly, or you will all lose privileges."
The leader turned away and left the room, leaving four more armed men standing around or sitting on broken windowsills. Maya sat quietly, her long dark hair hanging in her eyes, until a woman scooted over to her and sat close.
"Do you speak Russian?"
the woman asked in Russian. Maya did speak some, but she didn't feel like talking.
"Нет. English?"
Maya hesitated. She was afraid to speak, but was certain this woman had heard her speaking English back in Belgrade. There was no denying it now.
"Yes. My name is..."
Maya interrupted.
"No, you know the rules. Don't say your real name. No one can hear us if we speak softly."
Maya looked at the floor.
"I don't want to know your real name."
The woman leaned closer to Maya.
"Fine. They call me Anka here. Where are you from?"
"Romania,"
Maya said.
"I am from Kyiv, Ukraine."
"Okay.
I wanted to tell you because you look older than many of the others."
Maya had just turned 23, and this did put her as one of the older women in the group.
Tell me what?
I have learned that one of us is a spy.
Now Maya looked up in surprise.
What? A Serbian guard told me when we were getting off the bus. He likes me, I guess. And before they left, he whispered that I should watch what I say to the others because one of the girls was put in here to inform on the rest of us.
Maya looked around in the dim.
That sounds crazy. Nobody is here because they want to be.
Another woman, Maya knew her to be Moldovan, leaned into the conversation.
Maybe it's crazy,
the Moldovan said, looking at Maya.
Or maybe it's you.
Louder, she said.
Maybe you are the informant. I am not an informant.
Others tucked closer on the floor, listening in as the Moldovan girl continued.
I have been watching you. I have been raped twice, once in Belgrade and once last night in the forest. Most of the other girls have been raped as well.
All of the girls within earshot nodded.
Others have been beaten, but you? I haven't seen them lay a finger on you.
Another young woman, also one of the Ukrainians, said.
I saw her touched. In the woods the other night, one of the men selected her, dragged her a few feet, but then he put her back in line when the other man yelled at him.
She eyed Maya now.
It was like you were being protected for some reason. Why? I don't know. I swear I don't understand what has happened.
The first woman hissed at her.
Liar! You are working with them.
She tried to protest, but the rest of the group moved away from her, leaving her alone on the floor in the middle of the room. With everything that had happened so far, Maya didn't think she had any more tears left in her, but she began to cry again. Talisa Korbu and I find ourselves sitting a couple blocks away from the main police station in Dubrovnik, Croatia, on a hilly residential side street off Ante Starkovica. It's pouring rain. Talisa has her coat on and an umbrella in her hand, but she's not worried about the weather at present. Instead, she's trying to psych herself up to walk straight into the police station and reveal to some possibly very bad people that she is here to unmask their very bad actions. I sure as shit wouldn't want to do it, so I can understand her reluctance. I'm trying to psych her up, too, but I can see that accomplishing her task this afternoon is going to take reserves of strength I have no confidence this young woman possesses. But she's all we've got right now, so I'm sending her in. Together we decide she will identify herself as a Europol criminal analyst and say that she is investigating rumors of a sex trafficking pipeline run by an international consortium. A pipeline that leads from far in the east to right here in Dubrovnik. The local police will be able to check out Talisa's credentials easily enough, and when they do, they will speak to her superiors, who will quickly tell them she has taken a leave of absence from work. Work that involves coordinating with European law enforcement agencies on money laundering and other financial fraud. At this point, Talisa's story of her hunt for the ringleaders of a human trafficking network will unravel. And it will be obvious to the local cops that she has gone rogue for some reason and has no sanction for her work here. Then, we hope anyway, the crooked cops and whatever gang is working with the pipeline in Dubrovnik will determine that the woman and her questions are at once dangerous and easy to silence. So they will pay her a visit, either to kill her or to scare her into giving up her hunt for answers about the consortium. We are lucky that Talisa and her half-sister have different surnames, as they were born to different fathers. We know Talisa won't be able to talk to the police without producing some sort of identification, and I have no way of obtaining quality forged documents for her in the time we have available to us. So, on the off chance Roxana is still alive, she won't be endangered by this fact. The women and girls I saw in the basement in Mostar, if they are reachable at all, will soon be distributed all over the world, dispersed into the wind where I will never be able to help them. For this reason, we hope our thin backstory holds, because we've no time to craft a better one. Hope isn't a strategy, I know, but we need a break. We arrived in town last night and I rented two rooms. One was a top-floor pension in the walled old town, and the second a larger apartment, also in the old town, but in a basement several blocks from the first. The first room is Talissa's, high on the hill on the southern side, backing up to the medieval outer wall that separates the old town from the ocean. Here she will wait for whoever the consortium sends after her. I choose the location carefully after walking the neighborhood and the staircases of the building. I've checked her window to make sure it opens, and I've looked at the roof and the courtyard out front, deciding on several courses of action depending on our enemy's tactics. I've picked a place in the large pedestrian-only old town, so the opposition can't just roll up in a convoy of vans and snatch her out of her bed and race away without me having time to stop them. No, with the location I've chosen, they will have to come on foot, climbing flight after flight of outdoor cobblestone stairs through narrow alleyways. I will be lying in wait and able to see and hear them coming by any route available to them long before they get to her building, much less through the courtyard, into the entrance, and up the three flights of stairs to her room. And I won't just be trusting my eyes. In my pack of gear brought along for the hit on Ratko Babic, I brought a half dozen small remote cameras, all of which connect to an app on my phone. I hid two of these in planters in the courtyard and entryway of the building where Talissa will be waiting, and two more cover angles around the outside that I won't be able to see from my vantage point. The tiny basement apartment I rented nearby can be converted into a torture chamber on the fly if I happen to get my hands on one of the men sent to silence the pesky Europol woman here on an unsanctioned mission to get intelligence on their operation. We don't move our belongings into either location. All my possessions I have in my backpack in the back seat, and all of Talissa's are either in her purse or in her rollerboard in the trunk. Additionally, during the day, I went shopping at a camping store on the eastern edge of the city, purchasing items I anticipate needing. I also bought a burner phone and a prepaid card at a gift shop. I wish like hell I were on an agency op, where I'd have access to intel and labor and gadgetry and the like. But I'm performing with limited resources and no support, so I have to make the best of it. The rain beats down on the roof of the little Vauxhall Corsa four-door. "You've got this," I tell her. "You'll be great." I say these lines with conviction, at least I think I do, and she gives me a little bob of her head in acknowledgement. But neither of us believes this plan of mine has much chance of going smoothly. I know it, and she lets me know she knows it when she articulates just exactly what I am fearing.
"But what if they take me into custody while they check out my story?"
I'm ready with an answer, because I've been pondering this all day. "Tell them you are working with others. If they act like they aren't going to let you out of there, call my burner phone and give me the names of the people you are talking to."
"Right."
"Once they check you out, they'll know you're full of shit. But making that call will probably keep them from detaining you until they're certain you're a rogue." I have no idea if this will work, but it sounds good anyway. She nods again distractedly, looks out at the rain in the direction of the station. Her facial features are pinched tight with worry, and the bangs of her short red hair hang over her eyebrows.
"I better go."
"I'll be parked right here when you're done."
"Sure,"
she says, and I worry she's not going to be able to go through with it. "Look, you can do this." I still can't work out exactly how someone so petrified of the danger can manage to push forward the way she has done. I understand her sister is either dead or in desperate peril, and I understand she doesn't trust local authorities to help. But I have never seen anyone this physically sickened by terror able to soldier on through the danger. I want to just respect her for it and move on. But I am certain there is another part to her story that I haven't explored yet. My thoughts drift away from this because I see her staring catatonically out the windshield. She's thinking about something. Her trembling lip has returned, and she's on the verge of becoming unhinged right before my eyes. I quickly say, "Listen, if something bad happens in there, if something goes wrong, if they take you in, I will get you out. She turns to me with bloodshot eyes that are as imploring as her words.
Please, Harry, whatever happens to me, you have to find out what happened to Roxana.
She sighs now and adds,
Don't worry about me. Worry about her. You can't just come in shooting people in a police station.
That isn't my plan, simply because it won't work. I'm not the Terminator. I promise that won't happen. Just keep calm, play your role, and if I have to, I'll play mine. Together we'll find out about Roxana once this part is done. This seems to help to some degree. Talissa fixes her gaze in resolution, and then, without another word, she climbs out of the little car and walks off in the rain. I watch her go, and I find myself picking holes in the parts of her story that don't add up, and filling in the pieces with my own ideas of what might be really going on here. 16. At 5 p.m., Talissa Corbu stepped through the doors of the main police headquarters, showed her credos at the front desk, and asked to speak to the highest-ranking person in the building. A smiling, middle-aged, and heavyset woman appeared and shook her hand, then ushered her into an office. Even though the Romanian couldn't read the citations on the wall, she got a pretty good idea that this lady was, in fact, the top cop here in town. This meant that either someone lower on the totem pole was involved with the trafficking ring, no one in the police department here was involved in the pipeline, or this middle-aged female with an easy smile was herself involved in ferrying female sex slaves from the east to the west. Talissa didn't see much likelihood in the last option at all. In English, the captain asked,
How can I help you, Miss Corbu? Thank you for seeing me. I'm here in town looking into allegations that women are being trafficked through Dubrovnik for the purposes of sexual slavery.
The woman blinked, but this gave away nothing to Talissa, because Talissa had no training to hunt for facial cues or body language that would tip her off as to whether the person she was speaking with was attempting to deceive her.
This is an investigation being overseen by Europol?
Correct.
The captain looked again at Corbu's credentials.
It says you are involved in economic crimes. That is true. I'm following the money, and it leads to traffickers, and it has led me ultimately to Dubrovnik. I haven't heard anything about this investigation. Who are you working with on the ground here? Our federal authorities? I am here in advance of a formal investigation in Croatia. This is primarily more of a fact-finding mission.
You aren't coordinating with anyone? That's unusual, isn't it?
Unusual, yes. Unprecedented, no.
May I see some of your evidence?
Talissa had been expecting this. She rubbed her sweaty palms together between her knees, out of the captain's view, and she measured her breathing as well as possible.
The police chief in Mostar was kidnapped yesterday. I'm sure you heard about it.
The chief replied,
Yes, terrible, terrible thing.
And then she said,
His body was found in his home just a few hours ago.
Talissa Corbu was poleaxed by this news, and she did a poor job of hiding her shock now.
Oh, I just understood he was missing.
The police chief regarded the Europol analyst curiously.
Europol is not terribly well informed, then.
I've been working. Haven't checked in with the office in several hours.
Well, let me bring you up to date. Apparently, Captain Vukovic was recovered alive yesterday, but then was killed sometime overnight, along with two other police officers staying in his flat with him.
I see, Corbu said.
I'm sorry. What does this have to do with us down here in Dubrovnik?
Talissa struggled to keep her voice as dispassionate as possible.
We have reason to believe Captain Vukovic was involved in the trafficking concern.
There was a home where girls were kept. It was in his jurisdiction, and our investigations indicate Dubrovnik was the next stop along the pipeline.
The pipeline?
This is the name we are hearing. It begins as far east as Moldova, or even Ukraine. Who knows? Russia, perhaps. And it leads as far west as Dubrovnik. After that, we don't know. We'd appreciate any help you could provide about the movement of exploited women through this area.
The captain wasn't smiling any longer.
You think the chief of police of Mostar, our neighbor, was tainted by this crime? Is it really help you want from me, or did you come to question me as a suspect?
I am making no allegations at all. I am an analyst, not an investigator. I am merely asking for help from your office, Captain.
The older woman leaned back in her chair and waved a hand.
Well, I for one know nothing of the matter. Of course, we've broken up rings of traffickers in the past. Albanians, mostly. Some Turks. Horrible people. Horrible crimes. But nothing recently. And nothing that came through Bosnia. I've never even met Captain Vukovic, personally. But he was well regarded, as I understand.
Talissa felt her trembling mouth, pinched it shut quickly, then asked,
Have you heard of something referred to as the consortium?
Again, the police chief blinked, but Talissa didn't register the gesture as significant.
In what context? I mean, there are all sorts of consortiums, aren't there? It simply means a group of people or organizations affiliated to perform some sort of transaction or business.
With this last sentence, Talissa Korbu began to notice a definite defensiveness in the police captain. She raised an eyebrow.
I'm sorry. I thought I was being clear. I am speaking in the context of the trafficking of human beings.
The woman just stared at Korbu now, then looked back down at her credentials.
Again, as you said, you are a criminal analyst, and clearly quite junior. Help me, please, because I don't understand your interest or your mandate.
This was just the suspicion Talissa and the American hoped to elicit from the captain. Still, she swallowed hard, fear welling within her.
You can check it out with The Hague. I'm on a fact-finding trip. Very preliminary.
Yes, I will be checking this out.
She looked up at Korbu.
Are you alone here in our city?
The Romanian's heart began to pound even harder, and she squeezed the armrests of the chair. Harry had warned her not to oversell her power, because in order for her to serve as bait, she had to appear vulnerable. She answered,
I'm in contact with colleagues back at the office, but I came alone.
Where are you from? The captain asked.
I live in the Netherlands.
The policewoman leaned her forearms on her desk, her eyes narrowing.
Not what I meant. Where were you born?
There was a faint air of menace in the woman's voice now.
I am Romanian, but I am here in my capacity as a Europol.
These trafficked girls, any of them coming from Romania?
Korbu fought the urge to leap to her feet and run out of the room. The captain was sensing something, picking her story apart before even checking with anyone back in The Hague. This was a dangerous dance, because the Romanian woman couldn't appear like she really did have the pipeline figured out. That would mean Europol would have this information, too. No, she needed to give the police here the impression she was doing this on her own. But she also needed to cast enough uncertainty on this that they would let her leave the building to give them time to sort her story out. Korbu said,
I would imagine that women have been trafficked from Romania. They have a lot of missing person cases, young, impressionable girls. Girls who, quite simply, have vanished from our streets.
So, this is personal to you in some way, isn't it?
There was no empathy in the captain's words, no concern about trafficked women or the investigator claiming to be looking for them. No, she was darkening by the minute. reaching a tone and demeanor that conveyed outright malevolence. Talisa Korbu looked into the woman's eyes and felt certain now that this Croatian knew all about the pipeline, and she saw Korbu as a potential threat. The Romanian kept control of her voice.
It's my job, Captain, just as keeping people safe here in Dubrovnik is yours.
She took a pen and a notepad from her purse and jotted down the address of her room, well aware of a tremor in her hand.
Here is where I am staying. I'll be here for several days, I imagine.
The captain looked at the paper, then back up at her foreign guest.
This location, a small third-floor pension in the old town? Are things so tight at Europol that they send you to a backpacker's residence?
Harry had told her that her accommodations would cause suspicion with the police. This was by design, although it was yet another gamble that might cause her to be held in the station while her dubious story was checked out. She fought tears of dread, controlled her voice as best she could, forced a smile, and said,
"It's fine. Fewer questions on the monthly expense report if I keep costs down." "I won't hear of it. Let me put you in one of our better hotels. A single call, and I can have you in a room at the Marriott, close by."
Korbu felt herself losing it. The captain was already trying to take control of her, to put her somewhere she or men involved in the pipeline could easily access her.
"No, thank you very much, but my accommodations are of no concern to me. I'll just stay where I am."
She stood now, as did the captain. The middle-aged Croatian said,
"One more question. I have to ask. Were you in any way involved with what happened to Chief Vukovic?"
Talisa was quick to answer. Perhaps she recognized after the fact, too quick.
"No, of course not. I was on my way to speak with him when he disappeared."
She held out her hand for her credentials. Once they were returned, she thanked the captain and left the police station, all the while terrified someone behind her would call her name and ask her to step into some side room, while her liberty would be stripped from her.
I sit against the wall of a bank, the car in view up a street to my right, the front door of the police station ahead on my left. I know I told Talisa I'd be waiting for her in the car, but I haven't survived this long by sending an agent into an enemy's hands possessing knowledge of my exact location. No. I got out just after she disappeared from my view, and now I'm waiting for her, careful to do my best to keep myself low profile and out of sight of any cameras. At this point, I'm so worried about the girl that I'm fantasizing my way through an intricate one-man attack on the police station to rescue her, Terminator style. But even in my imagination, it doesn't go as well for me as it did for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Probably because I'm no cyborg. No. If they do keep Korbu for questioning, then there is nothing I can do but hope like hell they release her in one piece, and not in many pieces tossed into the Adriatic Sea. I lean back against the wall of the bank, my eyes shifting regularly to the front door of the police station in the distance. The rain has stopped, but the low clouds and mist are hastening the onset of darkness. I check my watch and see that Korbu has been inside less than 30 minutes, although it seems like quadruple that. Then, the door of the police station opens for the dozenth time since Talisa entered. But this time is different, because I see what I've been praying for. The young redhead in the black raincoat is alone, moving at an assured pace back in the direction of the car. She seems okay, so I begin looking behind her, curious if anyone follows her from the station. No one exits the building while I watch, which is very good news. A few minutes later, I meet her back at the Vox Hall, and she is agitated.
"Where the hell were you?"
"Making sure you weren't followed." I climb behind the wheel. "Get in."
She heaves her chest, annoyed at me, but she does as I ask. I fire up the little car, and I drive off without saying another word. 17.
It's only when I'm deep into the late afternoon traffic and I've scanned all my mirrors and convinced myself there is no tail that I begin talking to her. "Well, they let you out, so that's a win. You okay?" I can feel the tension in her, and I worry she's about to cry.
but she takes a few breaths and answers me.
I'm okay. I was very scared.
You were very brave.
Just desperate.
The comment means something, but I'm not going to pursue it now. I ask, do you think they found you suspicious enough to check out your story? She looks down at her hands. I can see them shaking.
Suspicious enough? The police chief didn't believe a word out of my mouth.
Good.
She's a woman, and I'm sure she's involved.
What makes you so sure?
Just the way she acted. We are fellow law enforcement professionals. There should have been a courtesy extended. I mean, there was at first. But then I mentioned the pipeline and the consortium, and she turned to ice before my eyes. She showed no respect for the trafficked women. She dehumanized them, as is often the case with those who exploit them.
I find myself wishing I had been in the room to evaluate the chief for signs of deception. Still, Talissa seems to know what she's talking about, so I take her word for it. It's not enough proof to snatch this police chief and pump her for info like we did Vukovic, but it's good information nonetheless. I ask, does it surprise you that women can be just as terrible as men?
No, I guess not. But in this type of crime, it's just extra horrible that it is someone of the same sex doing the exploitation, isn't it?
It's pretty bad.
What now?
She asks, after a moment more collecting her thoughts. You gave them the address of your flat?
I did.
Then what comes next depends on your level of commitment. I'm watching the road while I drive in the direction of the old town, but when Talissa doesn't answer, I look to her. She is staring me down with anger, and I realize I just said the wrong thing. Quickly, I add, I didn't mean to question your commitment to your sister. I just mean that the more risk you take tonight, the larger the chance that the opposition will take the bait.
What sort of risk?
Well, we can do this a couple of different ways. I can take you someplace where they won't find you, and then I can haul ass back to overwatch your room. If they come for you tonight, I'll be able to photograph them and hopefully identify them. Maybe even follow them back to somewhere associated with the crimes, or grab one of them tomorrow.
That sounds like a good plan, no?
It's the safest for you. But there's a way we can increase the odds they'll make their move.
How do we do that?
We walk you through the city, with me trailing you. We make it obvious you're here alone, and I look for someone tailing you. Then tonight, we put you in your flat, just where you told them you'll be.
And then they come to kidnap me?
Exactly. If the police have watchers or informants around your hotel, we'll make it look so easy for them they'll have no reservations about snatching you. She bites her lower lip and closes her eyes as if she's just willing this to all go away.
Are you making it too easy for them?
If you do as I say, I won't let them get you. She replies,
if someone comes, how will you know it's someone from the consortium?
Let's just say I have pretty good asshole radar. This doesn't translate well to Romanian, apparently, because I get no response. I add, trust me, I'll know.
You ask for a lot of trust as a man who has told me little about himself.
That's fair. What do you want to know?
What is your background?
Meaning?
Are you a member or former member of the U.S. military, American law enforcement, or an American intelligence agency?
I can't answer that, sorry.
Okay, you won't tell me about your distant past. Tell me about your recent past. You assassinated General Babic, saw the women being held there, and then left them behind, running away to save yourself. Am I correct so far?
Not very charitable, but also not wrong.
And you kill for money, yes?
She's drawing conclusions here, but she happens to be right. I think about giving her a non-answer, but I need us to keep up this relationship if I'm going to recover the women. I say, sometimes yes, sometimes no.
You are a hitman, then?
This lady's not going to be president of my fan club anytime soon. I can see that plainly. I operate. I'll leave it there. Not all jobs are like the Babic, ah. I turn into a parking garage right outside the pedestrian-only old town along the coast. As I look for a place to park, Talissa says,
These women, what is it about them that is making you do this? I mean, why are you even here?
It's a variation of a question I ask myself over and over. They were in a bad situation, and I might have put them in a worse situation. I feel responsible. If I can help, I want to do that. I add, and I also want to help you find answers about what happened to Roxana.
But why?
Because sometimes I have to do what's right.
But you're a killer.
I said sometimes. I park the car while she thinks. When she doesn't speak, I say, I only kill bad people. She chuckles mirthlessly, showing me she thinks I'm joking. I don't reply, but she adds,
Is it maybe that you aren't so interested in saving people, but are more interested in the action, the danger, the killing? I mean, why else would someone do what you do for a living?
Damn, she's hitting close to home, and I don't like it. I say, I didn't choose this life. Let's leave it there.
But you are here now, when you could go anywhere else and do anything else. Do you like to kill? You don't seem like a psychopath.
This is her first compliment. Thanks, I reply. This is what I do now. I'm good at it, even though it's a shitty thing. I figure I might as well use it for good.
You kill people for good?
We're sitting in the still car, looking at each other. You know what Ratko Babic did, don't you?
Of course. I was a baby then, I guess, but I've heard the stories. Still, that was a long time ago. What is the point in killing an old man now?
I like the thought of terrible people hiding out, running scared, because even though they were bad a long time ago, they know that there is someone dangerous out there who hasn't forgotten about what they did. If there is one chance in a million that the boogeyman is going to come for them to make them pay for their past sins in the present, it will terrorize them. Even if I can't get to everybody out there who deserves a visit from me, I can give a lot of assholes sleepless nights, and that's better than nothing.
You are a strange man.
Also fair. I reach into my backpack and pull an earpiece out of a charging cradle and hand it to her. I pull a second, identical unit out of the cradle and put it in my ear, then cover it with my brown hair, which is plenty long enough to hide it. I say, Put it in and let your hair cover it. It can transmit and receive, and the charge will last at least 16 hours. The silicone cap will keep it in place. You could fall off a bridge and it won't come out. I've got another set to switch to if necessary.
So I just talk and...
And I'll hear you. So don't say anything bad about me. I'm joking, but she's not in the mood. I can see her stiffening up some, knowing she's about to become live bait in waters where predators are lurking. She puts in the earpiece and adjusts her short red hair, slings her purse over her shoulder. Wherever you go, I say, I'll be watching.
Just don't kill anyone.
She turns and starts walking out of the garage. No promises. I mutter to myself, and I wonder if she'll be singing a different tune before this evening is over. Quickly, I reach into my backpack, pull out a black t-shirt and a gray long-sleeved shirt, and reach for a ball cap, but decide against it. Nobody around here is wearing a ball cap, other than the occasional American tourist, so it won't do a thing to help me blend in. Instead, I grab a pair of eyeglasses with uncorrected lenses, and I put my pack over a shoulder. Before Talissa disappears onto the street, I am moving into position behind her. She eats a leisurely dinner in an outdoor cafe and then strolls the length of Straden, the main street of the old town, where I almost lose her in the heavy crowd of tourists. But I have the benefit of being in comms with her, so I ask her to slow, and soon I'm back in position. My eyes scan the scene robotically. I'm not looking for people watching her. That would be impossible in such a crowd. Instead, my brain is taking in data quickly, only the information relevant to my work, and weeding out anything extraneous. As I shift my eyes to the left and right, I search for likely places for surveillance personnel to position themselves. And then I look at the clothes and hair and age and sex of the people in those places. I can narrow down 90% of the public in just a few seconds. And then my eyes lock onto anyone filling out a general threat profile. The watchers, if there are any, could be either male or female, but they will probably be male, between 25 and 55, wearing some sort of clothing a local would wear, and an overgarment or outer garment that covers their waist so they can hide communications gear and or a weapon. I pay special attention to those with facial hair, but also those with military-length haircuts, not because I think the Croatian military would be involved in this, but rather because those involved might be regular police, and they often have specific grooming standards that must be maintained, even if they are working for some mob element. If someone fits all the criteria, then I'll look at their attire, their shoes, their fitness level, and, if they're wearing them, their sunglasses and their watch. Trust me, it doesn't matter where they are from. From Brazil to Hong Kong, there is a look to those in the game. Not me. I'm careful. I'm not wearing anything tactical, and I'm not built up like a linebacker. And, unlike others who do this sort of thing, I keep my eyes moving, but my head doesn't swivel left and right like I'm guarding the damn president. But I'm on the lookout for those who do. It's exhausting work. My eyes and my brain tire, but I've been doing it for so many years, I know I can keep it up as long as I have to. As Talissa turns off Straden to head south, I don't see a tail, but I do see two men who might be interested in her. They aren't walking behind, but are instead leaning against the wall of the old bell tower between a pair of arched passages that lead directly to the old port, a marina just outside the walls of the old town. Both are in their 30s. They are thick, tough-looking guys with close-cropped hair, jeans, and tracksuit tops. They're just smoking and talking, but my eyes lock onto them because of their appearance, and once Talissa passes their position, I see them turn their heads her way and focus on her exclusively. Got 'em, I think. But I quickly check my enthusiasm. These guys look like cops, and I'm on the lookout for dirty cops. But these could just as easily be clean cops unaligned with and unaware of the pipeline, ordered by their superiors to find Korbu in the old town to make certain she is indeed alone. I want to tail or capture dirty cops, and I don't know if these two are bad guys or just two dudes on the job for what they assume to be legit reasons. The men do not follow the girl, but I see one of them speak into a mobile phone, and I imagine he's notified someone else ahead of Talissa so that person can pick up the surveillance. I normally wouldn't walk right past two guys who are either opposition assholes or else doing the bidding of opposition assholes. But I don't have time to take this slow, because for all I know, they've radioed ahead to a snatch team, and their aim is to roll up my agent before she even arrives at her room. That would be ballsy on their part. It's only 9 p.m. The sky has cleared, and there's still some light out, and the narrow passages of the old town are full of shoppers and diners and tourists. But they could try it, and I can't let them succeed if they do. I slip past the two men. They are still watching Talissa as she disappears in a crowd up a passage leading to a long and high stairwell to the south in the direction of her hotel. The men take no notice of me at all. A minute later, I'm heading up the stairs behind the Europol analyst, and I see a second pair of men, so identical to the first it's almost laughable. These two are also static, and as she passes their position, I see one of them reach for his phone, then begin speaking into it. I'd lay money on the fact that there is at least one more set of goons up closer to her flat, and this guy in front of me is in comms with them now. Again, I can't be certain their job isn't to pick up the Romanian criminal analyst, but I can't imagine why, if they were ready to detain her now, they would let her walk past four cops not far from the exits of the pedestrian and walled-in old town, only to be detained by more guys hundreds of stair steps higher and farther away from the exits. It would serve no purpose, I tell myself, and then I rethink things and pick up my pace even more, because the third group could potentially be hitters. Assassins.
And if this is the case, they'd have every reason to kill Talissa Corbu far from the heavy pedestrian traffic of Straden. I continue up the stairs, and I check in with the girl.
You doing okay? Softly, she answers. I can hear the labor of her climbing the stairs in her voice.
You should know how I'm doing. You said you would be watching me.
I am watching you. No, don't turn around, just trust me.
Trust again,
she mumbles. Then,
I don't see anyone following me or paying me any attention. I've been stealing glances in windows and such.
I roll my eyes as I move in her direction. Leave that part to me, please. Just walk.
Trust you mean?
There is a mocking tone in her voice. I consider telling her about the surveillance I saw, but I don't want to scare her. Instead, I just say, don't go straight to your flat. Make your next right. Follow that alley for a couple of minutes. Give me time to get ahead of you and look at the area up there.
You think they are waiting for me there?
She asks, a little nervously. The answer is an almost definite yes, but I say, let me find out first. 18. I head straight for the address Talissa gave the police captain, and when I get there a couple minutes later, I see a tiny children's playground, no larger than half a basketball court, across the narrow cobblestone passage from Talissa's building. Three grown men sit in the playground. One of the three is on his phone, standing by the gate in the park, 20 feet away from the other two. He's lean and wiry, but with the same almost military-style short hair worn by the two other pairs of men I saw a few minutes back. And it's apparent to me now that the opposition was pretty sure Talissa is acting alone, outside the bounds of her duties for Europol, because the other two tough-looking goofballs maintaining this watch are sitting on opposite ends of a children's seesaw in the middle of the little playground. One of them has his back to the building where Talissa's flat is located, but the other is facing it directly, and they're idly chatting in Serbo-Croat, as if they don't have a care in the world. For a second, I wonder if these three might not be involved in all this, so relaxed is their posture here. But then, as I walk past, I see the dude on the phone look up, check me out, then turn to flash his eyes quickly on the stone steps up to the building across the passageway. It's obvious to me that he's here on a job, and the job involves looking for people and monitoring a location. He's Oppo. They all are. No question about it. I sit down on a bench on the cobblestones 100 feet away from them, and I check the cameras I have stationed all around. Seeing no one else who appears threatening, I speak softly so that only Talissa can hear me. You cool?
I'm fine, Harry. What is the situation up there?
Well, it's pretty obvious you did a good job selling your story back at the police station. There are some men here waiting around for you, but I don't think they've come to pick you up. They're just here to see if you are going where you said you were going. Nervously, she asks,
What do you want me to do?
Come up to your building. Don't pay any attention to the three guys in the playground, and go up to your room.
But what if you're wrong? What if they just shoot me?
Nobody's shooting anybody. I amend this, unless it's me shooting them. She whispers more softly now, as if to herself, but I can hear her.
Oh my God.
Trust me, I say, probably for the 10th time. It will be fine. I spend the next couple of minutes pretending to look at my phone until finally Corbu walks past me. She sneaks a glance my way, but I glance down, willing her to just play cool. She strolls along next to the low stone wall of the playground, ignoring the men there, all three of whom I'm now watching carefully. Their eyes are on her, but they do a pretty good job of looking disinterested. Cops, for sure. I am guessing they're all probably detectives.
Like the men in the more touristy part of the old town, I don't know if these guys really are part of the pipeline, or if they've just been sent here as lookouts by the brass on the take from the traffickers.
I'd hate to have to shoot them without more knowledge of their intentions. but my right hand is inches from the Glock on my hip, and I am certain I can have it out and on target faster than any of these big goobers can get their hands on the grips of their weapons. Talissa disappears up the steps into the stone courtyard of her building, heading towards a staircase at the back that will take her up to her room. I look back down at my phone and soon hear the three men talking softly. Stealing a quick glance, I see the guy who'd been on his phone walking away, leaving the two men on the seesaw. In my earpiece, I hear Talissa.
Did everything go okay?
Yes. I count a total of 7 men tailing you.
7?
There is a fresh shock in her voice. Yeah, but they are just watchers. These aren't the troublemakers.
The troublemakers? They are coming later?
They're probably coming later, yeah. I hope this to be the case, but I don't say that to the scared woman in her room. Instead, I say, just stay where you are. Keep your bag nearby. I'm going to get on the roof of your building so I'll be able to cover all the stairwells they can climb when they come for you.
When they come? How will you get me out of here?
I have a plan for this, but I don't want to tell her about it yet, because I don't want her to freak out. I say, don't worry, that part is easy. And this is true, as long as she doesn't freak out. Pushing concern for this out of my mind, I rise from the bench and head off in the opposite direction of the park, with plans to double back behind Talissa's building and climb through a window so I can make my way inside the courtyard. Jaco Verdorn dozed in the cabin of the Gulfstream jet, sitting in the middle of a team of 9 men, most of whom were also asleep. It was only 10 p.m., but this brief rest between jobs was likely all this team was going to get for a while, so the men were taking advantage of it. In Verdorn's lap was an open dossier on his target in the Balkans, Cortland Gentry, former CIA officer, now on the run from the agency. His information came from the SSA, the State Security Agency of South Africa, his former employer. SSA had the file because the Americans had shared it years ago, when they first deemed their former employee a threat and issued a shoot-on-sight sanction against him. Verdorn had spent 9 years in the intelligence realm and had been involved in his nation's hunt for the infamous Gray Man, to no effect, but to great and lasting frustration to the 41-year-old. He knew the dossier in his lap from back to front, had all but memorized it. But now he was back in the game, hunting the Gray Man again, and he couldn't have been happier about it. Verdorn had left his nation's intelligence services 4 years ago to found White Lion, a private security concern registered on the island of Crete. White Lion had paperwork to show a robust list of clients, but in truth, they only worked for one organization now, the Consortium, and one man, Kenneth Cage. All the shell companies that acted as White Lion's official clients served some sort of purpose in the consortium, and White Lion billed them for work such as convoy operations in Nigeria, personal protection in Ukraine, and professional risk management consulting in Germany. Verdorn had a staff of dozens, all hard men well aware of the organization they serviced and the industry in which it did business. But tonight, he flew south towards Croatia with only his 9 best assets. These were all former South African military officers, all highly trained with weapons and tactics. But beyond this, each and every one of them had learned the art of invisibility. It was Verdurin's own fascination with and study of the Gray Man, years ago when he was put on the hunt, that made him mandate to his assets that they dress, behave, and operate in the field not as members of an intelligence service or a military unit, but as regular members of the public. To this end, they made dozens of adjustments to normal operating procedure regarding dress, communications, equipment, tactics, and the like. They didn't work in teams of 2 or 3, an instantaneous tip-off to some watchers. No. Verdorn's assets each operated alone when on surveillance missions, while remaining in covert communications with one another. These 9 men, plus Verdorn, were elite specialists in the tradecraft of remaining clandestine, and Jaco Verdoorn had employed his team on dozens of operations for the consortium around the world. The Gulf Stream hit some turbulence, and this woke Verdoorn up. He looked out the portal at the night sky. He imagined they were somewhere over Austria about now, and he thought about going to the galley for a bottle of water. Just as he was about to release his seatbelt, the phone next to Jaco Verdoorn flashed. He scooped it up.
Yeah?
It was the cockpit. The first officer was a White Lion pilot who, previous to joining the security firm, flew Saab Gripen fighters for the South African Air Force.
Call for you, sir. Send it through, Jimmy.
And for the next 10 minutes, the president of White Lion Corporate Security and the director of operations for the consortium spoke with Kostas Kostopoulos, the regional director of the consortium in the Balkan states. The Gulf Stream only had seating for 9 in the cabin, but there was a belted seat in the aft lavatory, and here Roger Lutz slept, only somewhat annoyed to be assigned to the lav seat because he'd worked in conditions a hell of a lot more austere than a sleek corporate jet, even considering the fact that he was sitting in the shitter. Lutz stirred with the buffeting turbulence, then looked at his watch. It was 22:15, and he figured they must be somewhere over Austria by now. Just then, the PA in the lav chirped, and he heard his boss's commanding voice.
Rog, front and center, yeah?
Seconds later, Lutz squatted down next to Verdoorn in the center of the cabin.
What's up, boss? We have a new target. Damn. Was hoping we'd get a shot at the Grey Men. We still might, actually. A woman who works for Europol is down in Dubrovnik, asking questions about the consortium. By name? By name. Shit. She went straight to the local cops, who we have in our pocket, and she said she was part of an investigation into trafficking involving the pipeline and the consortium. Shit, Lutz repeated. Shit is right. But the police chief, who is with us, checked her story out with The Hague.
Verdoorn looked down at his notepad, now sitting on the top of the Gentry dossier. Reading the notes he'd jotted down while talking to Kostas, he said,
Thalissa Corbu is an economic crimes analyst from Romania. She's got nothing to do with trafficking, and, according to her employers, she is currently on a personal hiatus at work due to some sort of a family emergency back home in Bucharest.
What the hell is she doing in Dubrovnik, then?
The Hague thinks she's trying to crack some case open, to get advancement, something about money laundering. Sounds like she's bloody bonkers.
So, she's working off book?
Totally. Swinging in the bloody wind. I looked at the names of the merchandise in the pipeline now, and I don't see any relation to her.
This seems like it is, in fact, her bid for a pat on the back and a shot at advancement.
So, since she's on her own, we need to remove her. Bloody right.
The fact that she knows about the consortium means she's a dead woman. She's staying in Dubrovnik. The cops have followed her and confirmed she's alone. But the timing with the Grey Men activity over the border in Bosnia is too convenient for my taste. She's working with old Gentry, I'm sure of it. She's the face and he's the brawn in whatever little scheme the two have cooked up.
What's our role, boss?
The police chief in Dubrovnik wants this woman picked up tonight and disposed of. The Greek is sending a team in of Albanians to take her from her pension and put a knife in her. Then splash her in the Adriatic. But Kostopoulos has agreed to order them to hold her at a safe house till I get there. I want to question her before they put her on ice.
We should grab her off the streets ourselves. You know how it is with the Albanians. They've got the will, good hard heads for this sort of thing, decent shooters. But they're not the sharpest tacks, are they?
Verdoorn shrugged.
No, they're not. But taking the woman off the playing field at the first opportunity is the right call.
Whatever intel she has, it's a danger having it out there in public. I'll go to the safe house and interrogate her myself. See what she knows about Gentry and who else she's talked to. I'll squeeze her hard, pass her back to the Albanians for disposal,
and then we'll go after our men. Sounds good. Only problem is this. There is a shipment in Dubrovnik right now, sped up due to the Grey Man hit in Mostar. They're waiting on transport, which isn't coming till early tomorrow morning, he added. It's a VIP shipment, and one of the items is tagged for special handling.
Unlucky, Lutz said.
He knew a VIP shipment meant the women being shipped had been picked out at other way stations and evaluated as being of especially high quality. This stock was sold in a special quarterly market, where criminal organizations around Europe and the Middle East could bid on merchandise that had the potential to earn them millions of euros throughout their admittedly short life cycle. These items could generate a dozen times what the average woman being sold into sexual slavery by the consortium could produce. The special handling item Verdorn referred to meant a woman who was to be protected at all costs because of the destination she was heading to and the men who had ordered her taken. One of these special handling captives was worth a dozen or more of the other VIP whores, and after a brutal indoctrination period of travel through the pipeline, these women were then treated with kid gloves. Their mental and physical health was improved through a time-honed process to make them ready for their duties ahead. Lutz knew he was being told the shipment that was now passing through the area where the American assassin was causing trouble for the consortium was a shipment that must be protected at all costs, only raising the stakes of this operation. He whistled softly.
The VIPs we can't do much about other than to help the Albanians watch over them till they make it onto the boat. But why don't we at least take the special handling item out of the theater? Get it out of danger and on to its destination.
I've run into this before, Yako said. Protocol mandates that merchandise, special handling or not, goes through the pipeline to the end. It's part of the psychological re-education.
Makes things difficult.
It's a process that's been refined for years, and it's working well. You, me, the rest of the shock troops, we'll all have to shoulder the burden of finding this killer and protecting the merchandise all the way to market.
Lutz said.
So, you're saying we've a full plate?
We'll need to do this discreetly, too.
That's it, mate. We'll land at 200 hours. Let's wake the boys and tell them what they're in for.
Moments later, Verdorn stood at the bulkhead and addressed the team, who were all now quite awake and interested.
We have to keep the pipeline secured for the current shipment and for future shipments. A situation has arisen in Dubrovnik, and we're going in to sort it out. Who's the target?
A bearded man named Van Straten asked.
We have a woman to interrogate, but she isn't our ultimate target. The real target is an American, Cortland Gentry, ex-CIA ground branch. A tier one para all the way. Military?
No military or law enforcement service. I have no clue how he found his way into ground branch. It's not in the file I've got. But we do believe he's here working alone, or perhaps with limited support from some rogue law enforcement.
The task, sir?
Verdorn's answer was succinct.
E-E.
Men nodded impassively, but they were all pleased. They knew that extrajudicial execution was a euphemism for assassination, and they knew their target would be in possession of great skill. When White Lion killed, their targets were usually hoodlums involved in the pipeline who'd gone astray. A weapons-free order against a former CIA ground branch paramilitary was a thrill to each and every one of Yako's troops. Someone asked,
Where do we start?
We talk to the woman he's working with, and then we'll go hunting. Trust me, you'll have to be switched on tonight. He'll be ready to look for men like you.
He surveyed his team now.
Jonker, lose those pants, too new. Clerk, your watch. What tourist wears a Luminox? Van Straten, the necklace. Put it in your kit bag and buy something local from a street vendor.
Sir.
Liebenberg. Every bloody item you're wearing has to go.
Right, sir.
He went through the rest of the team, looking them over one by one with a discriminating eye, trying to pick out the most subtle cues that they were involved with this sort of work. He found things wrong with the attire or gear of Bacchus, Diker, and Boyle, but Lutz, his second in command, was perfectly clean of incriminating telltales.
Let's break out the maps and get to work. 3 hours till landing.
19.
The old town is a ghost town in the middle of the night when the tourists leave. And it's so quiet, I find myself on the verge of dozing as I sit here on the slanted slate roof of the apartment building, tucked behind a small satellite dish that breaks up my silhouette to anyone looking from a distance. But I fight sleep, check my camera feeds every couple of minutes, and try to push worry from my mind. I have a rope already attached to an iron bar affixing the water tank to the roof. I'm wearing leather gloves, and my backpack is secured on my back. I'm in the black t-shirt and jeans, the brown Merrell hiking shoes, and I have a black balaclava over my hair like a watch cap, ready to pull down over my face if necessary. The Glock 19 is hidden inside my waistband on the right side, with an extra magazine and a quick utilization tourniquet. My Spyderco matte black paramilitary two-folding knife is in my back left pocket next to my Surefire Tactician tactical flashlight. I have medical gear, more clothing, rope, cash, and ammo in my pack. This is me rolling light, but I'm in the middle of the city, and that mandates the absence of body armor, a long gun, and other gear that would make me less comfortable, but more comforted, considering I might have to put myself up against a half dozen assholes tonight. I also have Talissa's pistol in a side pocket of the backpack, but I'd fire every round on my person out of my Glock before I went for her little gun. Around 1 a.m., I hear the sound of movement over my earpiece. Talissa is stirring in her bed. I'm surprised that she's been able to sleep, and wonder if she might have been doing so only because she was finally granting me the nearly blind trust I've been asking from her for the past 2 days. Her soft voice comes through a second later.
Harry?
I'm on the roof directly above her window, but she doesn't know my exact location. I'm here. Everything is fine.
Everything is not fine, she replies.
What are you?
I have something I need to tell you.
Yes, she does. I know she's lying about parts of her story. I've worked out a theory about some of it, and I do want to hear all of it from her at some point, but not now. Now I need her focused on the operation, not on what led her to everything that has happened. Listen, Talissa, whatever it is, it will keep until we...
No, I need to tell you. I need to tell someone, because I don't know if I will still be alive when the sun comes up.
There goes my theory that she was giving me blind trust. She doesn't even know if I can keep her alive for the next few hours. 2 things, I say. You aren't going to die, and I already know what you are going to tell me.
No, you don't.
With a tired sigh, I say, okay, stop me when I'm wrong.
What?
I should ease into this, but sometimes I don't filter myself well. You say you got involved in all this when your sister was kidnapped, but that's not what happened, is it? Your sister got involved in all this when you used her to help you investigate the consortium. I can hear her on the verge of crying when she answers.
Yes. Yes. This is all my fault.
I sigh again. She's going to tell me about it. She needs to tell me about it. So all I can do is stay vigilant while we talk. Talissa says,
I spent 2 years digging into the ways transnational crime launders money through European banks. I worked with police organizations around the EU, and with the help of some friends in Liechtenstein, in Switzerland, and in Portugal, I began to put together a picture of something massive. Different shadowy companies I was finding in my research, companies that didn't seem to have any connection between one another, all seemed to be following the same set of practices. Their offshore corporations were set up the same, their capital purchases, their investments,
the ones I could see anyway, were nearly identical.
I scanned my cameras, then the alleys below. Sorry, Talissa, you're losing me. She sniffs hard.
We dug into a corporation registered in the Cayman Islands that made large deposits into an account in Germany. I found out the corporation has investments around the world, small percentages of above-board companies, restaurants, shipping, computer applications, whatever. But then I find another corporation making deposits into another account at the same bank, this one registered in Singapore, and it has virtually the same holdings. A third and fourth concern, these with transactions into and out of other accounts, do exactly the same. Over time, I started looking for little tip-offs, and I was able to identify over 140 concerns, all around the world, acting in concert.
She's forgotten that I knock heads for a living. So, what are you saying?
It's simple, Harry. If one organization purchases $1 million worth of common stock in Siemens, the other 139 do the same. There are some variances, but there is a definite pattern.
Okay, I'm tracking, but I don't know the relevance of it.
It means there is a process in place, and there is someone overseeing the financial end of a massive amount of shell corporations.
Right. Like a consortium.
Exactly like a consortium. A collection of concerns, each individually worth something below the threshold of an amount that would generate much interest from banking investigators, but together, they value billions of dollars.
I'm with her now. And whatever they're doing, you think it was illicit?
Clearly. I presented my theory to my employers, but was told I was venturing out of bounds of my mandate. They told me to get back to doing what I was being paid to do. Instead, I began researching this consortium alone. 6 weeks ago, I tracked an airplane owned by a company tied to the group to Bucharest, my hometown. I thought that, just maybe, this would be the break I was looking for. I didn't tell a soul in my office. I only contacted local immigration officials there. I found that the men on board the plane were in town for a week of meetings with a hotel and restaurant chain.
Who were they?
I didn't know any names. Corporations and individuals can shield that easily. The flight itself originated in Budapest, but that doesn't mean anything. The businessmen could have been having meetings there. It landed in London and Barcelona as well. Whoever was on board, all I knew was that they managed money illegitimately. I took them for white-collar criminals, boring illicit finance and tax evasion, maybe some associations to accountants who worked more directly with organized crime. I didn't think these people were dangerous. I mean, I just assumed they were wealthy bankers laundering money.
I looked down over the narrow passageways to the north below me, as I say. Rich people can be assholes, too.
I know.
She hesitates a moment, then...
Roxana, you've seen the picture. She was... is beautiful. She's also charming, irresistible to men. I used to be so jealous of her growing up. Even with our age difference, she always got all the attention.
She's crying again, but keeping it together.
You know what my mother said to us?
What's that?
She would tell her friends, in front of us, Talissa is the smart one, Roxana is the pretty one. It used to upset us both.
I get it. I'm sensing Talissa wasn't just jealous of her sister growing up, but she retains some of that jealousy even now. I wonder if the sister felt the same way, but jealous of Talissa's intellect. But it's time to get to the hard stuff. I say, so, how did Roxana get involved in all this? Through tears, she says,
the best, most exclusive nightclub in the city is owned by the hotel group the bankers were flying in to meet with.
It's in a factory building near where they were staying, and it was no big leap to assume those rich bankers on the flight would go there.
The afternoon the plane landed, I called Roxana from The Hague. Told her I was working on an investigation with Europol. And I asked her to go to the club to help me.
And she just did it? Talissa sighs.
Roxana looked up to me. She would do anything I asked. I knew that when I called her.
So you two were close.